no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. I've got another 60 minutes of radio drama for you this Tuesday. We'll hear first from Columbia Workshop. Their episode titled 4 into 7 Won't Go. That one aired April 30th, 1938. Then it's The Hollywood Soundstage and Shadow of a Doubt, their episode from January 10th, 1952.
The Columbia Workshop, under the direction of William N. Robeson. Last week, the Columbia Workshop presented an English play in American radio technique. Tonight, the workshop offers an English play in the British radio technique. A presentation of our guest director, a young man known in the farthest corner of the British Empire for the brilliance of his radio plays, the excellence of his radio production. Mr. Val Gielgud, dramatic director of the British Broadcasting Corporation. The play you are about to hear is Mr. Gielgud's first American broadcast, although workshop listeners will remember his production of Death of a Queen, which was relayed from London by shortwave last September, and which introduced an entirely new technique to American listeners. Tonight, Mr. Gielgud will direct a radio play entitled 4 into 7 Won't Go, written by himself and Commander Stephen King Hall. At the end of the play, the workshop has asked Mr. Gielgud to give the American audience a brief conception of the contrasts and differences between American and British broadcasting. The Columbia Workshop presents 4 into 7 Won't Go.
China 5XY calling, and we bring you our nightly broadcast of last-minute news bulletin. The rumors of the kidnapping of Sir Henry Hartfield's party, which have been drifting into the international settlement for the last few days, were confirmed a half hour ago when a demand for their ransom was received by the British consul at Tientsin. The ransom note contained unprecedented demands, including a stipulation for 25 machine guns of the most modern pattern, 1,000,000 rounds of ammunition, and $50,000 in silver. A landing party of British bluejackets from the gunboat Grampus, as well as Japanese troops, are said to have departed this evening for the interior to attempt the rescue of the prisoners. Grave fears are being felt, however, for their safety, as it is believed that the commander of the bandits is the powerful warlord, General Wu Soling, who became notorious for his lawless activities on the Upper Yangtze some months ago. Sir Henry Hartfield, who retired only a few months ago from the British consular service, after 15 years in the Far East, was making a final cross-country journey in North China with his wife and 3 children when the kidnapping occurred. Sir Henry and Lady Hartfield are accompanied by a Mrs. Anstruther, an intimate friend of theirs, and by Mrs. Anstruther's only child. Mrs. Anstruther was left a widow last year. Reports from Rayhold this evening indicate that fighting has again broken out all along the Great Wall.
When I got up to the fifth hole, I think I said...
Morning, George. Drink from me. Waiter.
Sure, the usual.
I say, George, this is bad news about Hartfield.
He always was an obstinate devil. Fancy taking women and children into the interior in these days. If you want my opinion, Tommy, he asked for it.
Perhaps. He was a damn good fellow all the same. I expect he thought he was well enough known and sufficiently popular to get away with it. After all, he must know the Chinese more intimately than any Englishman in the country.
He was efficient enough, certainly. I saw a good deal of him at one time. Long, lean beggar, hard as nails. Good fellow to work with, but I don't think I should like to be married to him.
Don't tell me he ever asked you, George.
No, but seriously. I wonder how Isabel Hartfield likes it. There was always a regular woman's man side about Henry. No, I don't mean anything fishy. You never saw him without some woman or another. I was always surprised that he didn't run into a scandal.
Yeah. What's Lady Hartfield like?
Isabel? She was one of the prettiest girls I ever knew. She must be 35 now, but she always knew her own mind. I liked her.
And what about this Anstruther woman, as you seem to be the child's guide to knowledge?
Well, I only met her once or twice. She's an American.
Oh.
She came out to live at the Hartfields and brought her kid after her husband died. I think she had known Isabel well in England. She must be 2 or 3 years younger. She's good-looking, but in just the opposite way. Isabel's tall and dark, and Mrs. Anstruther's small and blonde.
And which does our particular gentleman prefer?
Oh, I'm not hinting at any scandal. Don't you make any mistake about that. Henry and Isabel are absolutely devoted. They're one of the very few couples I know who've managed to make a success of marriage. Mrs. Anstruther is far more Isabel's friend than Henry's.
Hmm. It's those kids I can't help thinking about. This country is going to the dogs, you know. What we want is a bit more mailed fist and a little less soft soap.
Oh, come off it, you old diehard. Have a drink.
Don't mind that. But all of those four miserable children are under 10, and that bandit fellow is a brute. Gilbert swears he was behind the massacre of the missionaries at Tanfu. You know what the Chinese bandits are if they're in a hole? That ransom can't be paid. It's absurd. And if they think the Japanese are going to catch them up, well, I don't like to think of it.
Well, don't think of it, then. Hartfield may be able to get around them. He can talk the language, which is something. And even a bandit knows that an ex-consul general has no end of a pull and might make things pretty unpleasant.
All I can say is I wouldn't care to be in any of their shoes. I wonder what they're feeling at this minute. I bet they haven't got cushioned chairs and ice drinks. I wonder what they're talking about.
Yes. Beatrice, there you are. What's the time? My watch has stopped.
Yes, so's mine. I forgot to wind it last night.
Oh, so you were upset in spite of seeming so calm.
Yeah. Weren't the children marvelous, though? They weren't scared a bit.
Ignorance is bliss, my dear.
You mean you really are scared?
Unspeakably.
But why? They haven't hurt us or starved us. But this hut makes quite decent quarters. And old Wu's American accent makes me feel quite homey.
Oh, don't pretend to behave as if you were in a cheap novelette, Beatrice. Harry's been out there in the sun for 2 solid hours. It seems like 2 centuries.
Hey, steady, Isabel.
Oh, I'm all right. I'm thinking of him. Oh, can't you believe that I'm still in love with my husband after 13 years?
Why, sure. Gosh, I wish I'd put on thicker stockings yesterday. Gee, these cost me a fortune, and just look at them.
Oh. I'm afraid we've worse things than stockings to worry about, Beatrice.
Oh, Harry, thank God you're back. I was beginning to...
Steady, my dear. Give me some water, will you? Thank you.
Henry, you look ghastly. Is it the sun?
I wish it was. No, the authorities have refused to pay the ransom. I expected it, of course.
Expected it? But it's damnable. Quite apart from us and the children, after all your years in the service, surely they
can... Fair, Isabel. Once pay the brutes, and there's no end to it. It's simply encouraging kidnappers all over China.
I guess that's true. Well, I guess we'll have to put up with a week or two of hiking that we didn't anticipate. If Wu will get me some sandals, I don't mind so much. Well, Henry, what is it?
It's pretty bad. I don't like to tell you, but...
What is it, Harry?
Well, the Japanese troops are on our trail.
Swell! Didn't I always boost their efficiency, Isabel?
Wu and his men are short of rations and ponies.
But this is all good for our chances,
Henry. Some of our chances, Beatrice.
Some?
Wu strikes camp and moves north in 1 hour. He can only take 3 of us with him.
Well?
The other 4 will die before he starts.
The other 4?
Wu means what
he
says, my dear.
No! No!
Well, come on, tell us. Which of us don't go?
That's the worst of it. He declines to decide. He leaves the choice to us. You see, Wu doesn't care. It's just a matter of arithmetic as far as he is concerned.
But how can we? The children had it. There are 4 of them. It means... Oh, how can we?
We must face it, my dear. As if we were on a sinking ship and there were only room for 3 in the only boat. These things happen. We must do what we can.
Yeah. Hey, have my handkerchief, Isabel. It's cleaner. Now listen. We've got to be sensible and dispassionate. And frank. Frank above everything. If we lose our heads, we may make a really bad mistake.
I'm sorry, Harry. I'll do my best.
I know you will, dear. We must all keep our end up in front of Wu.
In front of Wu?
Yes, he proposes to be present while we make up our minds. As a matter of fact, it mayn't be such a bad thing. It'll help to keep us reasonably dispassionate.
Dispassionate?
We've got to achieve that. Unless we want to be hysterical or go raving mad. As I pointed out just now, Wu means what he says. But there's this much consolation. The children will know nothing about it.
You mean they'll die in their sleep? Painlessly?
Yes. I've his word for that. Queer devils, these people. I believe he's honestly sorry to have to force us to the decision at all.
Sorry? Why, that cruel, inhuman brute. You realize, Beatrice, that one of the children at least will have to...
Steady, Isabel. Steady.
I am hard.
My dear, please, he's here now.
All right, Harry. I'll do my best not to disgrace your old school time. You'll have to buy a new one when you get back to Shanghai, dear. The old Estonian society would never recognize that one.
Isabel!
I do not intrude, I hope.
Oh, no. We were expecting you.
The master has said, make no movement which is contrary to just principle.
Is it principle, as you call it, to murder children in their sleep?
Isabel, please.
It is nothing. Superior men are not always virtuous. Men of principle are sure to be bold. But those who are bold may not always be men of principle. I will not interrupt your deliberation. But in the words of the master, I would advise you to put aside the point of which you stand in doubt and to speak cautiously at the same time of the others.
In doubt? Oh.
Won't you sit down, General?
Thank you.
Well?
You know, I'm finding it extraordinarily difficult to begin.
When a man is in difficulties, can he be other than slow in speaking? To speak is easy. To act is difficult.
Oh, you'll probably despise me for it. I know you will, Beatrice, but I can't help it. Is it useless to appeal to your mercy?
Entirely. I must think first of myself and my companions at the mercy of the Japanese. You are, if I may say so, without impropriety, no more than barbarians. The relation between superiors and inferiors is like that between the wind and the grass. You are the grass. The grass must bend when the wind blows across it.
Hey, don't you think we better get down to brass tacks, Henry?
I suppose so.
Well, you don't sound particularly interested.
How can I be? The results are all too horrible to contemplate. In any case, I come first on the list to die.
Harry! Oh, that nonsense. You're the most valuable of us all. The best brain, the best person. You've your real life to live after years of official routine. You're too intelligent, Henry, to begin to talk of women and children first. Gee, in this sort of situation, that's just bunk. Besides, think of the children. Well, I'm assuming you'll take care of Jane for me. A father can do more for them than a mother, in my opinion.
That's arguable. But what isn't arguable is this. I can do nothing for anyone if I survive.
Harry, why?
Why? Use your imagination for a moment, my dear. Sir Henry Hatfield of the China Service leaves his wife, another woman and several children to meet a cruel death to preserve his own life. I should be a pariah from London to Hong Kong. I should have to change my name and disappear. I and mine would be outcast. No, thank you. You can count me out. I hate the idea of dying, but I prefer to die quickly than endure a death in life.
But Henry...
And that's not exaggeration, Beatrice. It's fact.
It's horrible.
Yeah. But I'm afraid it's true.
Of course it's true. You pay for privilege in the long run. A fact which those who haven't been born to it most conveniently forget. A gentleman can live as badly as he please. He must die well, or be damned in this world and the next.
He who offends against heaven has none to whom to pray.
But have we all offended? Harry, the children.
Of the children, three are female. In your country, as in mine, there exist too many women. In China, many female children are considered of very small account.
You're a devil.
Fine words are seldom associated with true virtue. I have only said what is demonstrably true.
Well, let's leave the children out of it for the moment. Gee, I always left the toughest question to last in my exam papers at school. Well, so do you, Isabel.
Yes. How did you know?
I snitched from you a good bit.
Did you? I always wondered.
Yeah, well, now you know. Henry, you almost convinced me just now. But why should the circumstances ever become public property? Isabel would back up any story you chose to invent, and I...
Well, supposing I was cynical enough to accept that, what about you?
I should be dead.
You?
Why not? My husband's dead. The only other man I ever cared for is... well, someone else's.
Beatrice.
Yes, my dear, you.
Well, we're being frank. We must be with one foot already in the grave. I've loved you ever since I came to live with you and Isabel. I've loved you no less because I'm as fond of her as one woman can be of another. But you're not mine. You never could be. My life, well, my real life, is finished. Well, I loathe the idea of dying. I'm scared. But I've nothing to live for except Jane. And if I know anything of mothers with only daughters, I shall probably do her more harm than good. Yes, you can't defeat my claim.
Harry can't. But I can.
You, Isabel. But how?
Because I've known that you loved Harry. Because you're the sort of woman he should have married. One silly and cowardly and unhelpful. I've never helped him. I've always been a drag.
No, my dear.
Oh, yes, I have. I know. You've been very sweet to me, Harry. You've been in love with me. Does love matter very much to us anymore?
I think so.
Isabel, you're simply finding excuses for an orgy of unreasoning self-sacrifice.
I'm not. I'm only remembering that one of my children will have to die. You think I'd let any one of them go into the dark alone? Oh, I'm frightened. More than either of you. But I'd rather die a thousand times than go on living with that memory in my heart.
I can't argue with that any more than I can accept Beatrice's solution of my problem. Isabel, would you find it harder if we died together?
I've always hoped that we might die together, Harry. I don't want to live without you.
And Beatrice could take the children.
Which of them? Is that so easy for you? Well, I won't live at the price of Jane's life. If I live, she lives too. Well, only three of us can live in all. Which of your three do you leave to me? Which do you condemn with yourself to join in this gloriously high-principled suicide pact? Teddy's 10, Angela 5, Carolyn 4. And Teddy's a boy. The general would choose him. But are you going to adopt his notions of what to do with superfluous girl
babies? Beatrice, don't be so bitter. It's hard enough, God knows. Don't make it harder for
me. Aren't you making it harder for me? Aren't you driving me into a corner? Am I to watch two of the people I love best in the world go out to their deaths and laugh at it? And I fight for my friend's life? See, you two are drunk with self-sacrifice. You shan't decide under that influence. It's crazy.
For a man to sacrifice to a spirit that does not belong to him is flattery.
For once, I agree with you, General.
I am honored.
The thing that strikes me as most remarkable in this business is the persistence of selfishness in our human makeup. Here we are, with death at our elbows, and we still go on fighting desperately for our own hands. You're angry with our attempt at self-sacrifice, Beatrice. But you're angry for the wrong reason. You're angry because we're emotional. Really, Isabel and I are being as selfish in making death our preference as you are. Honestly, I know I'd rather die than try to live down the reputation of being a coward and a cad. And honestly, Isabel would rather die than see Teddy or Angela or Caroline go, just as you would over Jane. We can't forget ourselves. And our children are only part of ourselves.
You analyze with exactitude. The master has said, while heaven does not let the cause of truth perish, what can the people do to me?
Yes, and a greater than he once denied his mother and his brethren. If we were divine, we could choose. But we're human and weak and ordinary. We can't see beyond one fact. The seven of us,
so nearly and dearly bound together by every sort of human tie, and four of us bound to die within the hour.
I regret that it is so.
Give us a little more time, won't you? We're still half dazed with the shock. I can't think cool even if I dared to. Harry, the authorities would pay if you insisted. General, let my husband give you his word to come back if he fails. Then let him go. He could get the pursuit checked while he arranged for the ransom to be paid for.
I will gladly take his word, but it is useless.
Useless?
Yes, your husband will not go.
Harry.
He's right.
Why?
Oh, don't be stupid, Isabel. You ought to know Henry well enough by now. He's old-fashioned, that's all. He won't buy his life at the expense of his reputation. He won't buy ours at the expense of the government he serves.
Doesn't he deserve that they should pay? He's given the service the best years of his life.
I'd be condemning other people to the same fate. Once let it be known that a bandit, forgive me, General, has been bought off on my account, and kidnapping will become the staple industry of any band of Chinese who can raise a dozen rifles and some good ponies. It's out of the question.
Even if I asked you for the sake of the children.
That's not fair, Isabel.
Fair. Harry.
Even then, I'm afraid.
So it's deadlock.
Kill us all, General, and have done with it. Murder us all.
What is unnecessary, I find most distasteful.
I think on this point I can speak for all of us. My wife is naturally upset. But feelings are apt to be closer to reality than reason in circumstances of this kind. I can't survive if any of the others are to die. Neither Mrs. Anstruther nor my wife will face life at the expense of their children. It's obviously impossible for us to condemn Mrs. Anstruther's child against her will. And as there are four children, even if all three of us die, one of my children would have to die also. We can't make such a choice. I refuse, point blank. So we will all die together and trust in God.
You're right, Henry.
Yes. There's no other way.
I am to accept this as your final decision?
Yes.
Will you listen to me for a few moments?
We're in your hands. But I think we should all be grateful if you would leave us to ourselves for the little time we have left.
It will not take long. Last year, I received an invitation to Geneva. It was the 66th, or it may have been the 67th, meeting of the International Conference on Disarmament. It appeared that my reputation as a bandit, there was no need, Sir Henry, to apologize for the use of the word, had become so widespread that I was invited as representative of the bandit population of China. While in that singular but salubrious city of Switzerland, I happened to become acquainted with a delegate from one of the smaller republics of South America. This gentleman expressed great indignation one morning because he had overheard a reference to himself as a damned Dago by one of the Anglo-Saxon representatives. In the veins of this South American ran the blood of the Incas. In his heart was the inextinguishable tradition of an ancient civilization. He spoke of the Anglo-Saxon as barbarian. As you know, we in China are apt to make use of the same term. I was interested as a former student of Anglo-Saxon history in the universities of Canton and California. Accordingly, I pointed out to my South American companion that while the Anglo-Saxons are in many ways barbarous and without culture, yet they possess their own virtues, and notably physical courage. This he denied. The conversation ended inconclusively. But on my return to China, it seemed to me that to test the matter would not be without interest.
Test? You mean that...
I determined to secure the persons of several barbarians and face them with the imminence of sudden death. If they showed cowardice, I would kill them. if they fulfilled my contention that only in physical courage is their civilization superior to ours, I would set them free.
Free? Oh, Harry.
You shall be escorted to the Japanese pickets under a flag of truce within the hour. I am infinitely grateful to you for your cooperation in my little investigation into the habits of the barbarians. For any inconvenience caused to you, I apologize. You will go down to the Yangtze River. I shall withdraw to the northern hills. As the master has said, the wise find delight in water. The virtuous find delight in hills. I have the honor to wish you the happiness of a safe journey.
You have just heard Fours into Seven Won't Go, a British radio play written by Mr. Val Gielgud and Commander Stephen King Hall, and presented by the Columbia Workshop under the guest direction of Mr. Gielgud. The Columbia Workshop is honored to present to the American audience for the first time Mr. Val Gielgud, dramatic director of the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard an example of the type of plays we broadcast in England. I'm afraid that in some ways it is not a very typical example, and probably some of you are thinking that we might between us have chosen a rather better author to begin with. But in choosing a play, I was rather handicapped by one thing, this business of timing, which is such a very different matter here than it is in England. In England, I can fit time to my plays. Here, you must fit plays to your time. You see, it's nothing out of the way in England for a broadcast play to last for as much as an hour and a half. I expect that some of you may have heard of what we call in England the production method of multiple studios and the dramatic control panel. That's a bit of a mouthful. What it means is simply that we take the various ingredients that make up a play, actors, music, sound effects, and so forth, separate them in different studios, and mix the output of those studios at a central mixing and control point known as the dramatic control panel. Now, a lot of rubbish has been talked about this method in rather highbrow terms. Some people, and even some authors, have made the mistake of thinking that a play done in eight studios is eight times as effective as a play done in one. That's pure nonsense. The multiple studio method is simply one more bit of machinery. If your play is very simple, like our play tonight, it is acted in one or two studios only. It's if the complications of production require it that there's any merit in adding to the number of your studios. Now, Mr. Robeson may not thank me for putting what I'm going to say into your head, but the Columbia Workshop is an organization which seems to me to take the business and the art of radio seriously. I confess to having picked its brains for more than one of its ideas to reproduce in England. And I believe that the people who back the whole notion of the workshop will agree with me upon the importance to them of knowing what you feel about their work, of hearing your suggestions and your criticisms, and even your praise once in a while. You can't throw bricks at us in the studio, and we can't hear you applaud. It's terribly important that you shouldn't let us feel for a minute that we are just pushing out stuff into a void. If you do, it may easily become just stuff. And if that is bad for you, it's worse for us. I should just like to add my personal thanks to Mr. Robeson for giving me the opportunity of working for you, to the actors who have worked for me, and to you for having listened both to the play and to me. Good night.
Thank you, Mr. Gielgud. The Columbia Workshop appreciates your kindness in interrupting your American holiday and making of it in part... Heard on tonight's presentation of Fours into Seven Won't Go, where Naomi Campbell as Beatrice, Wanda Paul as Isabel, Reginald Beach as Henry, Dennis Green and George Graham as the two men in the club, Dwight Wiest as the Chinese general, and George Tiplady as the radio announcer. The workshop is keenly interested to receive the reactions of the American audience to this British play and to the comments upon British and American radio just made by Mr. Gielgud. Will you kindly address your criticisms, comments, or suggestions to the Columbia Workshop, care of the Columbia Network, New York City. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Jeff Chandler.
This is Anne Blythe.
And this is Hugh Douglas saying, welcome to Hollywood Soundstage. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, the doors of our Hollywood Soundstage open to the promise of high dramatic adventure. 30 minutes of absorbing entertainment made possible through the combined and generous cooperation of the entire motion picture industry. Our play tonight is strange and compelling, a provocative story filled with suspense. It stars Anne Blythe as the lovely young girl and Jeff Chandler as her Uncle Charlie. Hollywood Soundstage is proud to bring you Universal International's great dramatic success, Shadow of a Doubt, starring Jeff Chandler, Anne Blythe, and the Screen Guild Players.
The Merry Widow Wars. I guess you all know the Merry Widow Wars. But have you ever heard it played in church? Strange, isn't it? But then everything about this story is so strange. Right from the beginning. I suppose the beginning was that day at home. You see, we live in Santa Rosa, a little town in Upper California. A very little town where nothing ever seemed to happen. And I guess that afternoon it had me down a bit.
Now, Charlie, that's no way to talk.
What's the matter, Charlie? Don't you feel well?
Oh, I'm feeling perfectly well, Mother. I've just been thinking, that's all. And I come to the conclusion that I give up. I simply give up.
Give up what?
Dad, have you ever stopped to think that this family's just gone to pieces?
We have.
Of course we have. We just sort of go along, but we don't get anywhere.
Oh, I don't know, Charlie. The bank gave your father a raise last March.
The second raise in 5 years.
Oh. Money. How can you talk about money when I'm talking about souls? What we need is someone to take us out of this rut.
Have you any suggestions?
Well, I was thinking that... Mother, I'm going to wire Uncle Charlie.
Darling, you're not going to ask for money.
Oh, of course not. Money wouldn't help. I'm going to invite him here for a visit.
Now, Charlie, you can't ask a busy man like that to come all the way from the East. Even if you can't reach him. You know he moves around so much.
Oh, I'll reach him, all right, and he'll come for me. I'm named after him, and we're the only relatives he has, and besides... Do you know what?
What, dear?
Well, I can't explain it exactly. It's just a feeling, but... Somehow I think he wants to come.
Hello, Postal Union. Will you take a telegram, please? To Mrs. Joseph Newton, Santa Rosa, California. Surprise, coming out to visit. Stop. Arrive Thursday and try and stop me. Love to all and a kiss for Charlie from her Uncle Charlie. That's right. That's the signature, Uncle Charlie. How much? Yes, I've got the exact change right here.
Yes, that was the message they handed me when I went into the telegraph office to send my wire to him. It was almost as though he'd heard me calling 2,000 miles away. And then, almost before we knew it, he had arrived. Tall and slim and such a boyish smile. No wonder Mother was so crazy about her brother, even seeing him so seldom. Oh, at dinner that night, he was completely charming and generous, too, with all the lovely presents he had brought.
A little something for you, Joe. I hope you like it.
Well, say, I've never had a wristwatch, Charles.
You've got one now. Here, Emmy, this is for you.
Oh, a fur scarf. Oh, Charles, I've always wanted one.
Oh, Mother, it's perfect, and it's exactly right.
I expect to be paid for it, too.
Paid for it?
Oh, Joe, he means that banana cream pie. Oh. I'll go and bring it in.
Hey, wait, Emmy. I'll give you a hand.
Oh, gave him quite a start, didn't I?
Oh, no, Uncle Charlie. You've made us all very happy.
Well, not yet. Not all of you. Here's your present, Charlie.
Oh, I didn't mean that. I don't want a present. Please don't give me anything.
Nothing? Why not?
Well, I can't explain it, but... Well, it would spoil things if you were to give me anything.
You're a strange girl, Charlie. Why would it spoil things?
Because we're not just an uncle and a niece. It's something else. I know things about you.
You do?
Oh, yes. I know that you don't tell people a lot of things. Oh, I don't either. And I have a feeling that inside of you somewhere there's something nobody knows about.
Something nobody knows?
Something secret and wonderful. Oh, I'll find it out.
It isn't good to find out too much, Charlie. Now, open your hand. There you are.
Thank you.
You haven't even looked at it.
Well, I don't have to look. No matter what you gave me, it would be the same.
Well, here, let me show you. It's a ring, an emerald ring, a real one.
Oh, it's beautiful. And you've had something engraved on it.
No, I haven't, but I will if you like.
Oh, yes, you have, Uncle Charlie. It's very faint. See it? On the inside. T.S. from B.M. Why, it's someone's initials.
Well, can you imagine that? That jeweler rooked me. He told me it was new. Here, I'll take it back, Charlie. Give it to me.
Oh, no, it doesn't matter. I like it this way.
But, Charlie, you don't want to go around with something.
Yes, Charles. Your favorite dessert, if I remember.
You see, Uncle Charlie, I was meant to keep it.
Yes, I suppose you were.
You see, now it's something special between you and me. I'll never give it away. To anyone.
Charles, why don't you go inside?
No. Need a little exercise, Emmy, to work off that meal.
Oh, you're not used to helping with the dishes.
Nonsense. So where do I put these dry glasses?
Oh, just set them on the cupboard.
We'll be done in a jiffy.
Charlie, be careful. That's the good set, you know. Maybe you'd better not sing.
Oh, I can't get that tune out of my head. Maybe if someone told me what it is.
It's a waltz.
Yes, but what one?
Well, your father would know. It's too bad he had to go to that meeting.
Oh, it's the funniest thing. Sometimes I get a tune in my head like that, and pretty soon I hear someone else humming it, too. I think tunes jump from head to head. Da-da-da-da-dee-da-da. Uncle Charlie, do you know what it is?
No, I don't.
I know it's a waltz. And it's Victor Herbert.
Yes, it's the Blue Danube Waltz.
No. Wait, I know. It's the Merry Wit...
I'm sorry, Emmy, one of the good ones, too.
Oh, nonsense, Charles. We have plenty of glasses.
Mother, should we chase him out before he smashes the rest?
That's a good idea, Charles. You march right into the parlor and set yourself down.
All alone? I bet that'll be fun.
No, it won't.
Hmm?
Oh, I mean, not if you read our evening paper. It's awful.
Come in.
I brought you some water, Uncle Charlie, in case you get thirsty during the night.
Thank you, Charlie. That's very thoughtful. I see you've got the evening paper, too. You going to read in bed?
Oh, no. I'm going to leave it in Dad's room. He'll want to look through it when he gets home.
Hardly worth it, I'd say. Well, pleasant dreams.
Uncle Charlie.
Yes?
Uncle Charlie, I know a secret about you you don't think I know.
What secret?
Remember I said you couldn't hide anything from me because I'd find it out? Well, I know there was something in the evening paper about you.
About me in the evening paper?
Mm-hmm. You read the paper and page 3 is gone. It was something about you, wasn't it? And you didn't want us to see it. But now that I know, you might as well tell me.
I guess you've got me, Charlie. Only it wasn't about me. It was someone I used to know.
Well, why don't you tell me? You've got the page right there in your pocket. I can see it sticking out.
Well,
I think I'll just...
Stay out of my pocket. It's none of your business.
Uncle Charlie, you're hurting my wrist, your hand.
Oh, Charlie, I didn't mean to hurt you. I was just fooling. That story wasn't anything, just some gossip. Not very pretty. Not for you to read. Forget it, will you?
Of course. If you say so.
That's the girl. Good night, young Charlie. Pleasant dreams.
I guess I did forget about the paper, anyway, for a while. You see, the very next day, those survey men phoned. They said we'd been picked as a typical family. Could they ask questions and take pictures and everything? Well, you can imagine we were pretty excited. All except Uncle Charlie. He seemed more annoyed. He went to his room and shut the door and wouldn't come out. And then when the survey men came over, I had to answer all the questions. You see, Mother was straightening up the kitchen for the picture, so I showed them both around the house. The upstairs, too.
Mighty pleasant little home, Miss Newton.
I've been hoping we could do it over, Mr. Graham. Oh, but then, maybe the pictures won't show all the details. I mean, that's such a small camera that Mr. Saunders has.
This is a Leica. Sharpest lens in the world. Don't you worry about the details. They'll be there all right.
Oh.
Now, tell me, whose room is that?
Oh, that's mine, but my uncle is using it now.
Could I get a picture? You know, a typical girl, typical room.
Oh, well, my uncle's resting, Mr. Saunders. I really don't want to disturb him.
Oh, naturally. Say, is there a back stairs?
Oh, yes, right down the hall.
Then I'll bet you 50 cents your uncle is out.
Oh, you're just trying to get Mr. Saunders in there to take a picture. Isn't he, Mr. Saunders?
That's right.
Besides, I know my uncle's in there.
I'm still betting he isn't. Want to take me up?
All right. Uncle Charlie. Uncle Charlie, may I come in?
You see?
Why, you were right. He's gone. Funny he should do a thing like that.
Maybe you don't know him as well as you think you do.
Of course I do. I know him very well. Are you trying to tell me I shouldn't think he's so wonderful?
Well, not exactly.
Someone coming up the porch, Jack.
Oh, I always say the more the merrier. Miss Newton, is that your uncle?
Why, yes, it is. Uncle Charlie.
Guess I'll take a picture of the hall.
What are you trying to do with that flashlight? Blind me?
Uncle Charlie, he was taking pictures of my room.
I'm not in your room, and I don't like to be photographed. I'm afraid I'll have to ask you for the film, sir. I must insist. Give it to me, please.
Okay, Fred. Let him have it.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, that's that, I guess. Let's go.
He was so strange. I don't understand it.
I think I could help you out on that.
You could?
Sure. Suppose you have dinner with me tonight. Then we can sit in the park and have a nice long talk. I thought I'd better tell you. This job of mine isn't always easy, Charlie.
Then you're really a detective.
Oh, Charlie, listen.
You're not on a survey at all. You lied to us. You just wanted to get into our house.
Listen, Charlie, you've got to trust me.
Well, you've done nothing but lie. You probably didn't even want to take me out tonight.
Oh, but I did. Honestly, I did. You don't know what it meant to me to take you out and talk with you, get to know you.
Just part of your job.
Oh, now, don't be silly. When I came to this town to find a man, I hadn't counted on you. I hadn't counted on your mother or your family.
Find a man? What man?
Well, we're not even sure if he's the right one. We won't know till they check that picture we wired east. The one we took of your uncle.
But you gave that one back.
No, we just gave him an empty roll of film.
Another trick.
And now, Charlie,
my
please.
Uncle hasn't done anything. He knows it would kill my mother if he did. Why don't you go away and leave me alone?
Because you're a nice girl, Charlie. Because no matter what, you're going to help me do my job. Now, Charlie, think. How much do you know about your uncle?
I know all I want to know. He's good and kind and generous. He came here and made us all happy. He hasn't done anything to...
To what? To what, Charlie?
Nothing. You wouldn't understand. It's something I've got to figure out for myself.
Why, Charlie, reading the newspaper in a public library. Don't you get it at home?
Oh, yes, Miss Corcoran, but there was something a couple of days ago. I meant to copy it, and they threw it away. A recipe.
Well, I hope you find it, and put the paper back when you're through.
I'll find it, all right. Can't be anything really awful, not enough to... Murderous, or... Police are conducting a coast-to-coast search for the man who strangled Thelma Shenley, former musical comedy star. Wanted for the deaths of two other wealthy widows. The fugitive is known as the Merry Widow Murderer.
You are listening to Hollywood Soundstage, where you have just heard Anne Blythe and Jeff Chandler in Act One of the famous motion picture Shadow of a Doubt. Act Two will follow in just a moment. But meanwhile, here's something worth thinking about. Our armed forces, our factory workers, and our civilian defense volunteers are all doing an important job toward keeping America free. But there's something that all of us can do, something that will help Uncle Sam and help us, too. We can all contribute to the future security of our nation and ourselves by buying profitable, safe United States defense bonds regularly. Now, back to Hollywood Soundstage and Act Two of Universal International's great box office hit, Shadow of a Doubt, starring Jeff Chandler, Anne Blythe, and the Screen Guild Players.
I don't know how long I sat there in the library, staring at the paper and not seeing a thing. But suddenly I realized that I was chilled as though someone had drawn a blind across the sun. I tried to tell myself it wasn't true, but there was the ring he'd given me, the emerald with faint initials in the band. Her initials, Thelma Shenley, the woman my Uncle Charlie had killed. I walked for hours that afternoon trying to decide what I should do. And after dinner, I walked some more. I was just at the park when I heard him call.
Oh, Charlie.
I hurried on, but he overtook me. I remember being frightened.
What's your hurry, Charlie? Slow down, will you? I want to talk to you. Come on, let's sit on this bench.
No.
I said sit down.
Oh, you're hurting my wrist again.
Well, I'm sorry, Charlie. I guess I got excited. Can't blame you, really. Not when I see something coming between us two. Tell me, was it something those survey men told you, that fellow Graham?
He's got nothing to do with it. I hope he never knows anything about you.
Oh, now, Charlie, that's no way to talk. After all, I've been around a bit. I've been chasing around the globe since I was 16. Done some pretty foolish things, too. Made some pretty foolish mistakes. Nothing serious, just foolish. I mean, like, what's the matter? What are you staring at?
Your hands.
Charlie, now don't start
imagining.
How could
you do things like that? You're my uncle, my mother's brother. We thought you were the most wonderful man in the world.
What do you know?
I know I said I'd never give this ring up. But I can't wear it now. Not with her initials in it. Here, take it.
You think you know something, don't you? You think you're the clever little girl who knows something. What do you know about women like that? Have you ever seen them like I have? Every day in the best hotels, every day by the thousands, drinking their money, eating their money, losing their money at bridge, playing all day and night, smelling of money, proud of their money. Horrible, faded, fat, greedy women.
But they're alive. They're human beings.
Are they, Charlie? Are they human or are they fat, wheezing animals? Hmm? What happens to animals when they get too fat and too old?
Stop it, please.
You see, you don't understand. All I want is a little help.
From me?
I'm so tired, Charlie. There's an end to the running a man can do. This is my last chance. You've got to help me. I count on you, Charlie. You said yourself there was something special between us. And think of your mother. It'd kill your mother. Charlie, give me this last chance.
All right.
if you'll go away.
Where to, Charlie? Where should I go? Where do you want me
to go? I don't care anywhere. Just so you go away from here.
I just haven't got a thing in the house for lunch, and I couldn't go to the market myself. Not with the cake in the oven. Charlie, I've never known you to stay in bed so late.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mother. I didn't sleep very well.
Your Uncle Charlie's been asking for you. He's on the front porch. Oh, here's the list for the grocery.
I'll run along, then.
The back stairs again? Charlie, why do you always go that way? Those stairs are so steep. Don't you want to tell your uncle good morning?
Well, I'll see him when I get back. It's shorter this way.
Well, watch yourself, dear.
Oh, don't worry. I know these steps. Mother!
Charlie! What happened?
Oh, I tripped. I think the step was loose.
Oh, good heavens, child, you might have been killed.
Yes. I might have. But I wasn't.
Yes? Oh, good evening, Charlie. Come in.
I wanted you to know. I almost had an accident this morning.
Yes, your mother told me. I was very worried.
When are you leaving, Uncle Charlie?
Leaving? My dear girl, do you know what I did today? I went down and put a little money in the bank. The bank where your father works. $40,000 in cash. Of course, there isn't quite 40,000 left. Now I gave 1,000 to the children's hospital, another 1,000 to the community chest. It made your father quite important.
When are you leaving?
You know, I've been thinking, Charlie. I want to settle down. Live in a place where people know me. Have some money in the bank, some sort of business. Be a part of this family.
I see.
The sensible thing is to be friends with me. I can do a lot for you, Charlie. I can do a lot for all of you.
Not you. We don't want anything from you. If you don't leave, I'll tell what I know.
Don't be silly, Charlie. Who'd believe you? A waltz running through your head? You don't like the initials on a ring? You connect it all up with a newspaper clipping? And now you haven't even got the ring.
You have it.
I? Ridiculous. I gave it to you. You see?
Uncle Charlie, I don't want you here. I don't want you to touch my mother. So go away, I'm warning you. Go away or I'll kill you myself. Do you know what it means to live in terror? I did. I knew he wouldn't stop at anything. At any moment, there might be another accident. He'd be very sorry. And I'd be dead. My only weapon was the ring. If I could find the ring, I thought I'd frighten Uncle Charlie into leaving town. It was the next night that I got my chance. Mother had invited all our leading citizens to meet her brother. And while they were downstairs drinking Uncle Charlie's champagne, I was upstairs going through his things. It was rather late when I came down.
Now, can't I persuade you, Reverend Phillips, just to drop...
Oh, no, no, thanks.
You know what the psalmist said. Wine maketh glad the hearts of men.
Oh, your gift to the church has given us cause enough to rejoice. Oh. And besides, I'm afraid my parishioners aren't overly familiar with the psalm.
Well, I always say that... Oh, there you are, Charlie. What kept you so long?
I was looking for my ring, Uncle Charlie. Silly me, I thought I'd lost it.
What an exquisite ring.
It's an emerald, Mrs. Potter. A real emerald. Uncle Charlie gave it to me for a going-away present.
What's that? Going away?
Why, Charles!
Isn't that what you said, Uncle Charlie? Didn't you tell me you were going away?
Yes. Yes, I did.
But, Charles, I didn't dream.
I'm sorry, Emmy. I didn't expect it to happen so soon. But, well, I got an important message, you see. A very important message. I'm afraid I'll have to leave in the morning.
Charles, I wish you didn't have to go.
That's the way it is, Emmy. You can't always do the things you like.
Oh, they're going to start. We'd better get off.
Emmy, Charlie.
Goodbye, Charles. You're right, won't you?
Of course. Now, watch yourself on those steps.
Goodbye, Charles.
Goodbye. Oh, Charlie, wait a minute. I want to talk to you.
Oh, they'll be starting in a minute.
Well, we can stand right here on the platform. I want you to know I think you were right to make me leave. It's best for your mother, best for all of us.
We're moving.
And she's not very strong, you know. I don't think she could stand the shock. I remember once when she was a little girl.
The train is moving. I've got to get off.
Oh, don't be silly.
Let me go. You're hurting my wrist, your hands. Let me go.
Sorry.
Let me go.
I've got to do this, Charlie, since you know so much.
Let me go, Uncle Charlie.
No, not yet, Charlie.
Please.
Not till we're going a little
Please
faster.
Let me go.
Not till we meet the train
Uncle
that's
Charlie.
Coming down the other track.
Please.
No mistakes this time.
Please,
each
let me
little
go.
Detail in its place. I've checked it all, you see. There it is now. It's
Uncle
coming
Charlie.
Fast, Charlie.
Please.
Almost time to say goodbye. Almost time to...
They're having the funeral now. It's the biggest funeral Santa Rosa's ever seen. They were all so shocked when I told them how it happened. How Uncle Charlie slipped and fell beneath the train. They're playing the Merry Widow Waltz. I told them that's what Uncle Charlie would have wanted. I don't think I'll ever forget him. And they won't either. They'll always remember the time they heard the Merry Widow Waltz in church.
You've been listening to the Hollywood soundstage production of Shadow of a Doubt, starring Ann Blythe and Jeff Chandler. And here are the stars of our show, back on stage for a final and very well-deserved bow.
Thank you very much, Hugh. But I think all the bows should go to the Motion Picture Relief Fund, which does such magnificent work here in Hollywood. This radio program helps support that work, and all of us are proud to share in it by appearing here. Right, Ann?
Beyond the shadow of a doubt, Jeff. The entire motion picture industry is joining forces to make this half hour one of the highlights of the radio week. And you'll agree they're doing a wonderful job when you hear what Hugh Douglas has to promise you for next week.
Oh, right, and since Hugh is just about to pop with his very important information, I guess it's time for us to bow our way out. Good night, everybody, and thanks again.
Thank you all. Good night.
Next week on Hollywood Soundstage, a powerful and absorbing story of the Old West. 20th Century Fox Studios' unforgettable picture, The Oxbow Incident, starring Charlie Ruggles, Edward Arnold, and an all-star supporting cast. The Oxbow Incident, next Thursday night at the same time. Be sure and listen. Shadow of a Doubt was presented through the courtesy of Universal International Pictures, who will soon release Bend of the River, a Technicolor production starring James Stewart, Arthur Kennedy, Julia Adams, and Rock Hudson. Jeff Chandler can now be seen in Flame of Araby, co-starring with Maureen O'Hara. And Ann Blythe will soon be seen as Gregory Peck's co-star in The World in His Arms, both Universal International Technicolor productions. Also appearing in tonight's cast were Junius Matthews, Virginia Gregg, Jane Morgan, Bob Bruce, and Jerry Hosner. Hollywood Soundstage was transcribed in the film capital. Our play was adapted and directed by Harry Cronman. There's Waxworks busting out all over. Yes, for 30 minutes every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. For a full hour on Saturday nights, you're invited to Robert Q's Waxworks on most of these same CBS radio stations. Enjoy tonight's big Waxworks show on CBS Radio. Hugh Douglas speaking. And remember, those lovable rascals, Amos and Andy, are here every Sunday on the CBS Radio Network.
That's it for the Relic Radio Show this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with more. Between now and then, you can find more old-time radio at relicradio.com, past episodes of this show, links to everything else Relic Radio. And if you'd like to help support it all, a donate button. Click on that for more information. Thanks to those who have donated. It's how this is all made possible. Thank you very much for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.